I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
First dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? My dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hello and welcome to Eureka, the show that gets under the skin of science in such a good way, as we invite a new expert every week to help us answer one of science's most interesting questions. I'm Rick Edwards.
And I'm Dr. Michael Brooks.
Not a real doctor. Hello. What have you got for us this week?
So this week is all about getting lost. We're asking if there's such a thing as basically a bad sense of direction.
I mean, instinctively, I know the answer because I've spent time with you, and you have a terrible sense of direction.
I absolutely
do.
You
remember circling the Science Museum? Circling the Science Museum for what? It was probably only about 10 minutes, but it felt like about half an hour, and we had to get to an event.
I remember we had to message the people that we were meant to meet.
Yeah.
And you just said, Michael's just got us lost. And we're literally back of the Science Museum.
But also, you did the classic thing where you sort of, you had the confidence of saying, yeah, this way. And having absolutely no idea where we were going.
Yeah, that's quite unusual for me because I don't really have a lot of confidence. Like I know
I think
I've
you
got
were trying to impress me.
Maybe I was.
And you failed.
I know I've got a bad sense of direction. I was thinking actually when we came in here today, if I had to draw a map of like getting from the front door of this building to the studio, I'm not sure I'd get it right.
Really?
Do you think you would?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, no.
I think I've got a good sense of direction.
I genuinely get to like down the corridor and have a little internal panic as like, is it left or right here? And you won't see it today, but when we leave, usually I'm like, I've done a little shimmy left when I should have gone right just tried to cover it up. Soho is my worst. I get lost in Soho every time I go to Soho.
You go to Soho quite a lot.
Yeah, I do. And I've even had...
It's essentially a grid system.
Is it though? I don't know. I've studied it, literally. I've studied it because I was meeting this Australian couple for dinner who
How
I met.
See?
Anyway, that's not. So they were staying in a hotel in Soho somewhere, and I had to walk them from there to where we were going for dinner, right? And I thought this is going to be embarrassing if I get them lost. Obviously, they're visitors to our fine city, and I so I studied it. I worked out where to go left and right. I walked the route in advance of meeting them.
Oh my God.
Still got it wrong.
Oh my God. You're so embarrassing.
Well,
so many.
I'm sort of owning it now.
That's not, no offense, that's not a bad sense of direction. That's just being thick, isn't it? Why, if you've walked it, just like remember what you've done. Like, how? I can't understand how you've done that.
But I guess this is what we're going to talk about this week.
Yeah.
In 100 meters, turn left.
Many of us have never had a great sense of direction. Getting lost a few streets away from your house, wandering into shops and leaving without remembering which way you came from. Even when we have our phones to guide us, some of us still manage to make a wrong turn here and there.
Recalculating.
But why? What does it mean to be a good navigator? Birds can navigate thousands of miles. Some of us can't even get home from a night out. Is it something that can be improved? Or is our over-reliance and dependence on automated directions eroding our natural ability to navigate for ourselves? Or maybe it's an obsolete skill. That's why this week we're asking, is there such a thing as a bad sense of direction?
You have reached your destination.
So obviously we've got a great expert to help us answer this question. And we'll be speaking with Mary Hegarty, who's a professor of psychological and brain sciences at the University of California, Santa Barbara. She's a navigational neuroscientist. And I actually just made that term up.
I was going to say.
I quite liked it though.
Yeah,
so she researches individual differences in spatial cognition.
So it's the entire reason for us doing this episode, for you to see if you can improve your piss poor navigational skills.
Well, you got your sleep episode. This is mine.
Yeah, fair enough. To be honest, I have often wondered why it takes people so long sometimes to just get from A to B, or why people can't understand directions, instructions, simple instructions, and they panic and will call you.
Me.
Actually, I have had a number of calls from you at various points around the country saying you don't know where you're going. And I'm just like, but you're not, this is the puzzling thing, you're not an idiot.
No, I'm not.
So, you know, I mean, if a swallow can navigate from North London to Namibia, why can't you get from Berwick Street to Poland Street?
I mean, I literally couldn't do that.
It's one road across.
Yeah, but I'd need to know which way to go, wouldn't I? So basically, okay, so I've done my research for this, and navigation is one of the most complicated things that we do, right? It's not straightforward at all. Mm. So it's a huge cognitive task, and it's not just one thing. It's lots of things going on. I mean, you have to know where you are in the first place, obviously. Yeah. You have to know where you want to get to. And then you have to understand the route that you're going to take there, track your progress. And this requires a lot of different brain regions actually working together to do stuff. And animals are just like, you know, quite well equipped for that. And they don't do much more than that, some of them really. You know, they eat and they navigate and procreate, and that's kind of it. So,
but what else do you do?
So you've got like animals are sort of got equipped. I mean, they've got genetics for inherent migratory routes. So that swallow going from, you know, North London to Namibia is actually, you know, in some ways programmed in, or some of it is programmed in. They have good mental maps. They have instincts. They have the ability to sort of look at the sun and moon, and you know, they've got sort of navigational aids from celestial things that I would have to learn how to do, whereas they do it sort of instinctively, if you know what I mean.
I mean, that's extraordinary in itself, isn't it? Like
it
when
is.
You're saying
that
it's sort of genetic that a swallow knows how to get to Africa.
There's a genetic part to it. Yeah. And obviously, you know, some animals can navigate by smell, which I definitely can't do.
Well, actually, I mean, as discussed previously on this show, our smell is not as bad as you think. But I don't advise that you start sniffing your way around Soho.
Poland Street.
I'm imagining you like on the pavement. And that's a horrible pavement to sniff.
And then
just
some
smells of coke.
Some animals are like sensing the Earth's magnetic field and able to do like navigation via that. I don't have that ability.
That.
No, I don't have that ability. And then they have communications and signalling, which I guess we do have between individuals where, you know, I phone you up.
And ask.
You say, go left now.
Yeah.
And some animals, like whales, dolphins, can use ocean currents as well and just sense those currents and, you know...
Pick them up.
Yeah, yeah. So they've got a lot going on.
So how are humans doing it then? Because we've not got many of those things that you're talking about.
Exactly. But that's something I asked Mary.
So we have what we call body-based senses. So things like proprioception and the vestibular sense. So this is sort of the sense of your own body movement as you're moving through the environment. And the vestibular sense is, you know, based in your inner ear. And that sense is orientation. So actually, when we just ask people how good is your sense of direction, that is actually a better predictor of people's ability to navigate when they're really moving around an environment, when they're physically moving in the environment, than if they're just navigating in a virtual environment where you're really using vision only. And one of the processes we study is called spatial updating. And we often do studies where we just blindfold people and maybe walk them on a path in a room, and then they have to either walk back to where they came from or walk back to the start or point to start. So, and that's really to see, you know, how well are they updating their position based on just sensing their own motion through space.
So in that experiment where you're blindfolding someone and getting them to sort of walk a path and then retrace their steps or lean them around for a bit and then ask them to point of where they came from, I would back myself so hard to do well at that. I really would. And I'd also back you so minimally. You'd be
diabolical. It's not a competition. It's science. It's blind man's buff. What's it called? Blind man's bluff or?
Blind man's buff. Buff.
I can't remember. Think. But it's basically that for science, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, can you navigate your way around or find things? And yeah, no, I would be terrible, obviously.
Do you reckon you could avoid obstacles? So I mean,
if I'd been walked past them.
So no, let's say it's a dynamic environment. So you've got, maybe there's like 10 of you blindfolded in a space and you've all got to move around. Do you think you'd be able to avoid? Because I think that suddenly your hearing is going to be very like...
Are you going to tell me you're going to do echolocation or something?
Yeah, I think I am. Yeah. You got a problem with that? Basically, I'm saying I think I could avoid stuff, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, humans can do echolocation.
Well, there we go.
I know, that's true. So, but they tend to be blind people who have developed it over years. And it's not just something you automatically do when you can't see.
Speak for yourself.
God, just you've got such a high opinion of your abilities, haven't you?
My ability to echolocate. No, I don't think I'm going to be good at everything.
Bat.
But yeah, I think I could do well at this. I don't even know if it's an experiment. I've just designed it myself. I don't know what it's proving, other than the fact that maybe I'm good at it. Best sort of experiment.
I mean, what that experiment, I guess, proves is if you can do it, it's not all to do with visual cues. It's not all to do with sight. So there are other things that go on, as she was talking about. So one of the things is proprioception. Some people have called it like the sixth sense, where you can see the sort of or sense the location of your body, like, or you know instinctively where things are on your body, where your hand is relative to your nose.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So you can touch your nose if you're blindfolded, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So you get that, and you've got a vestibular system that will tell you if you've turned right, sort of thing. By the sort of motion of fluid in the ear canal, and you'll have sort of a sense of, oh, I turned right, even though you can't see it. And I mean, you know, you kind of turned right because your legs did it, but you get a sense of how much and everything else like that. So it's a bit like the sort of accelerometer in your phone. Mm-hmm. It sort of knows, you know, how much you've accelerated in what direction and stuff.
Yes.
So you've got that. And you can... The amazing thing to me is that you've got cells in your brain that just fire. So certain neurons fire. So these things are called place cells. So the guy who discovered them won a Nobel Prize for them. So he discovered them back in the 1970s, got Nobel Prize in 2014. But basically these things are in the hippocampus, which is the sort of thing in the center of your brain. Mm. And it's to do with sort of spatial awareness and spatial navigation and stuff. And he was actually looking at memory. So he'd implanted an electrode in the brain of a rat, And then he realized that there was a cell there that was a brain cell that was only firing when the rat was in a particular place. Like, and so these place That's cells, like they're like memories of a particular location. So you can be standing at your kitchen sink and you will have a certain number of cells. And they think it might be like 10,000 or something that fire, you know, together and tell you this is your kitchen sink.
Sort of like you've dropped a pin there effectively. Yeah.
Like on your phone, like you dropped a pin and then a different set of cells will fire when you're, you know, in your pub, you know, local pub or something like that. So you've got these place cells that kind of just act as sort of memories.
That's really cool. I never heard of that.
I think it's really cool. I'm glad he got his Nobel Prize. I think he deserved it.
Yeah, I mean, he had to wait for a while. Just going to check we think this is good. 40 years later. Yeah, we do, actually.
Yeah, so and you've also got grid cells, border cells, and the head direction cells, which make a note of like what the vestibular
system is. So do you think you haven't got any of these?
I don't know. The grid cells just are kind of to do with understanding how one location relates to another. So probably not got those. The border cells, that's really interesting. So these ones fire when you come up against a wall or you see a wall or something. And like your brain remembers, oh, you can't go that any further in that direction sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So maybe I don't have all of these things. I mean, it's a sort of recognized disorder to not be able to do this kind of thing. I don't think I've got a disorder, but I'm saying some people...
We've not got an order.
Some people are worse off than me, I would say. But the amazing thing is, like, those cells, like, they even fire in imaginary spaces. So if you have, like, sort of memorized the layout of Hogwarts or something from the films or something like that, you'll have sort of groups of cells firing in your brain when you see a certain part of Hogwarts or something like that.
So it doesn't even have to be in the physical environment.
It doesn't have to be a real space, no.
That's mad.
It's pretty amazing, isn't
it? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, we'll make memories of grids and locations and boundaries and everything else, and our brain stores them.
As these kind of spatial things.
And,
coordinating.
Yeah, and some people's signals between those cells are weaker than others. That's what they found. So that would be me, I would imagine. But there's a lot going on.
Don't know if I want to ask this question, but I feel like... I have to. Are there any gender differences at play here?
I'm going to let Professor Mary answer that question.
We know that in some navigation situations, men are better than women, but that seems to be a big stereotype in our culture. And it seems that the stereotype is maybe stronger than the reality, so that men tend to overestimate their sense of direction and women underestimate. Women also have more spatial anxiety. In fact, we did some studies in our lab where we asked people, again, about their sense of direction, spatial anxiety, and then we asked them questions about what we call growth mindset. So asking, well, do you think that you could improve your navigation ability? And so there's, you know, this is a big topic of research in cognitive psychology, and there's been a huge amount of work on growth mindset and showing that some people, if you think about intelligence in general, you know, some people have a growth mindset where they believe that they can improve their intelligence. Other people feel their intelligence is fixed. So we asked the same sorts of questions about navigation ability. And we found that actually people were less likely to have a growth mindset when it comes to navigation ability. They really sort of thought it was fixed. And the other thing I've found is that when I talk to people, people are very happy to tell me that they have a bad sense of direction. And there doesn't seem to be any stigma about it. You know, people just think that. And what we found in the study was that people with a poor sense of direction were less likely to have a growth mindset. They were less likely to believe that they could improve their navigation.
I'm sorry, I hate to sort of question our expert here, but is she suggesting that there should be a stigma and I should be embarrassed?
I'm suggesting that.
Obviously you are. I mean, it is embarrassing sometimes.
Yeah.
So like, I'll be looking at my phone, like trying to get a direction, and then I'll walk off.
And then realize
and then the blue dot moves in the wrong direction, so I've got to turn around and walk back again. And that happens to me quite a lot.
I just don't... I mean, it even sort of gives you... Like it shows you.
Yeah, it does help. Like it does help that I've learned how to use that a bit better.
Yeah,
but it doesn't always work, does it? Like if you've not got a great signal or something, then you don't always get that, or it seems quite vague. So
were you better with old school maps? Like with an A to Z.
Yeah, because I think because you had to work harder initially to orient yourself with a paper map. But there is sort of research that shows that paper maps sort of are more directly sort of connected to the way our brain works than like digital stuff like online maps. So you know, because partly because online maps like on your phone, they swing around as well. They don't always stay in the same direction. Mm, so you know, it's just an
extra... trying to help you. That's what that's it's trying to help.
Yeah.
So you're not sort of doing this with a map.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to be applying for the London cabbie job anytime soon.
Yeah, okay. So have you got a weird hippocampus, do you reckon? And B, is there anything in the brain structure of a cabbie that you is there a difference between someone who's got the knowledge and someone who hasn't?
Yeah. Absolutely. So this is an amazing, like, 5-year project to map this, to like map the hippocampus of London cabbies, like before and after gaining the knowledge, and they found that they had a much bigger hippocampus than average people, basically. And the longer they keep doing it, the bigger it grows. And there's actually a trade-off because there's, I think it's the back of the hippocampus that gets really big, but the front part gets smaller. So it means
that
they have
a bit that controls small talk.
I mean, that'd be amazing if it was. It's actually the bit that enables you to remember like a visual thing and then redraw it. So you like stare at a picture, mm-hmm. and then you're told to like do a sketch or stare at an object, do a sketch of that object, and they're not as good as average people are at doing that. But on the, you know, that's because they've sort of devoted so much of their sort of brain resources to this spatial map and these incredible sort of intricate understandings of how everything in London sort of relates to each other. So it's kind of quite a cool trade-off, I think.
Do you think I back myself to draw something accurately?
Yes, you back yourself on everything, don't you?
That's right, yeah. That's right.
Would you actually?
Yeah. I think so, yeah.
God, you're a monster.
Just all of it comes down to just being really competitive. So I think 99% of it is I'll just try much harder than most people will bother to try.
Yeah, that's possibly true. That doesn't give you an ability to do something.
No, but I feel like some people would just be like, well, I don't care whether I'm good at this thing.
So you would come out looking good compared to other people.
Exactly.
Even if what you'd drawn was actual
was not
shit.
Particularly good, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so to answer your question, there's not really a gender difference in terms of actual abilities.
Right.
But there are cultural differences between
sort of
genders that occur.
Attitudes, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so there's sort of no... there's no difference between like the hippocampus size of men and women generally. But women are much more affected by anxiety about being out and about. So when they're given tasks, they are basically thinking about other issues other than A to B. They're sort of, you know, they have a general anxiety about being out, what they might encounter, what they might not encounter. Mm. And so it's sort of like it's not a straight focus.
Right.
And I mean, there's another study as well, which shows that women tend to navigate by landmarks rather than, and men tend to say, you know, I'll go north for 3 blocks and then east. And then, you know, they kind of have a process route, whereas women are shown to navigate more visually by what they see in their environment.
Oh, I think I favour the ladies' approach.
Okay.
I think I prefer a landmark. Yeah.
Yeah, you'll back yourself against any ladies doing navigation, won't you?
Yeah, or men.
So, but it's interesting because it's basically when you're having to navigate, and this is true even in virtual environments, what people find, what researchers find, is that there's a higher anxiety for women, basically because of cultural issues about, you know, being out on the streets or being out and having to find your way to somewhere unfamiliar. So it's kind of, you know, it's called wayfinding anxiety. Mm. And it's sort of seen across a lot of different cultures. And, you know, it's basically about personal safety, sort of intrudes on the whole sort of process. So,
well, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Like that is, in a way, like obviously more important.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like there's, you know, better late than never sort of argument against speeding almost. So just like your safety is above everything else.
Yeah.
Like, fine, you get a bit lost. Who cares? You get there in the end.
Yeah.
If you get there safely, I suppose. Anyway, hold that thought. We're going to be right back after this to discuss whether it is possible for Brooksy to improve his miserable sense of direction, how age might impact your sense of direction, and we'll ask our expert, Mary, is there such a thing as a bad sense of direction? Spoiler, yes.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Okay, so we've said that if women are less good at navigation, it is just due to anxiety or possibly the way that the tests themselves are carried out.
Yeah. I mean, there is another factor which I should have mentioned, which is that throughout their lives, they won't have had as much practice at navigation as men who roam more freely on the streets, who don't worry about getting lost or being in the wrong place at the wrong time. Mm. So there's literally, you know, if there's navigational ability differences, it's down to factors like they're not allowed out, or they don't allow themselves out, or they don't, you know, they don't travel on their own in the same way. So, which is quite sort of disturbing in a way, you know, that can have such an effect. But it's definitely
makes,
there.
It's sort of sad, isn't it? But it does make sense. So of crucial importance to you, can you or can one improve their sense of direction?
Well, it was interesting because Professor Mary's talking about that growth mindset. Mm. And I think I had that growth mindset like that when I was trying to say, right, I can do this. I can study the map. I can walk the route. I can remember this thing. And then when it came to the crunch,
you couldn't.
I couldn't do it. So I think I might have lost my growth mindset. But it's not just me, right? Because there was a study done in 2006 of 24 college students. They were driven around a couple of routes in an unfamiliar neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Like 10 weekly sessions of this. And then after about four sessions, they were driven on a connecting route between the two. So that, you know, basically they were asked after every session, like, can you draw a map of this environment that we've been driving you around? And a lot of people got better and better the more they did it. But there were some people who got nowhere. Literally, after the first session, they drew a map that was just as bad as the one they drew after the 10th session. Like, they got nowhere with sort of getting the lie of the land. And so, you know, it's sort of, if you haven't got it, you just haven't got it.
Do you feel better because you're not alone?
I sort of do. I'm owning it, at least. But at the same time, you know, obviously, the other thing about this is it deteriorates with age.
Oh, unlucky.
There really
is no hope.
It's not like I'm going to get better now. I'm just sort of gradually...
You haven't got a growth mindset.
I'm gradually getting
very
worse.
Very defeatist stuff.
Yeah, and older people are worse at navigating around spaces than younger people. Basically, from the age of 20, your ability starts to decline. You know, I mean, I've done some declining in my time.
God, I must have been like a swallow when I was 20.
Oh, for fuck's sake. So, I mean, and obviously, I mean, talking about old people, I mean, this is something you see with dementia, right?
Kind of makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, that inability to navigate or know where you are in the space. And that's why, so there was a professor at UCL called, or it still is there, Hugo Spears. He created an online game to try and work out what was going on with dementia, what the factors were. And it sort of became this massive hit. It's called Sea Hero Quest, and Mary told us about it.
They created a navigation video game, and it sort of went viral, and they collected data from like 4 million people. And so they're just, the data from this project are just starting to come out, but they have some very interesting results. One is that navigation ability is related to the GDP of your country. So richer country, people seem to have better navigation ability. The size of the sex difference is related to sort of how equal, you know, men and women are in that culture. So if they're more equal, the size of the sex difference is smaller.
I mean, I'd never thought about this until, you know, sort of looking into this. That sort of freedom to roam makes a huge difference to your ability to develop navigational abilities. And yet another kind of disadvantage that women face. So if you live in a country with less gender equity, like Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, and you're a woman, you're basically worse at navigating than your male counterparts. So, because you haven't had the opportunity to sort of build those cognitive maps.
Well, it's not the worst thing about being a woman in those countries.
No, I mean, it's not, but it's sad that there's another level to this, isn't there?
Yeah.
So like if you're in Sweden and Denmark, there's no difference between men and women, basically, in spatial skills terms. Mm. Because they've got that kind of gender equality and they can all do, you know, the same amount. And then Mary mentioned this correlation with economic wealth.
Mm.
Like, so if you have a higher GDP, you have a population that's better at navigating. And that's basically to do with cities, navigating like travel infrastructure, like public transport.
Yeah, yeah.
So you get used to like reading a map, working out what things are. You're traveling more probably for work as well. Whereas if you're in a rural community, or, you know, low income sort of, you know, rural communities, you're really staying at home, working on, you know, in a local environment. So you're just doing less traveling and less navigating.
Well, what about a kind of nomadic people? Their sense of direction would be excellent.
Yeah, but I think they're sort of fairly small proportions of populations within those low economic nations. But I mean, yes, they will have amazing abilities, but possibly not. They wouldn't be transferable to like living in a city, for instance.
Mm. So that all implies that there is a degree to which you can learn and get better at it. So then there is a bit of hope for you.
Yeah, so there is. So I can use the tube. I can use it at map.
Oh, brilliant. You can use the tube. Give the man a medal.
But I would predict as well that I think kids today are probably worse than me on average. Because actually kids are roaming much less as children.
Mm.
So So in two generations now, the sort of home range of primary school children, so the distance they travel on their own, has dropped by 90% in the last two generations. So they just don't go out on their own and learn how to find their way to school or whatever. So and also they're not being allowed sort of to travel alone anywhere near as much. So you know, you're traveling with other people, you're making group decisions, or you're following the pack, or you know, so there are changes going on.
All of these societal influences are quite grim, aren't they?
They're not great, are they?
No.
Really. I mean, I don't want to, you know, do a kind of, you know, back to nature call, but it does feel like we're losing something cognitive, actually. Mm. Let me also say that familiarity with the terrain matters. So the general, so if you take somebody out of their natural environment or where they've grown up or whatever, mm-hmm. and put them somewhere else, then that sort of makes a difference too. So there's a Hugo Spears has this story. So the guy who did the research at UCL for this game, he was doing some research in the Peruvian jungle, like just doing some field work things. And he was with, you know, a group of people who were sort of looking after him and making sure he was all right. And he said he wanted to go out for a walk one time just by himself a little bit. They said, you know, don't go too far. And he says he went about 10 meters in the Peruvian jungle and he was lost. He's like, just like lost his orientation. And he was lost for 2 hours because he just kept moving. He said everything in his brain just told him to keep moving and you'll find your way back. But of course he didn't. He just found his way further and further into the jungle. And he started like macheting like marks on trees and then finding he like was going around in a circle and had like come back to the same tree. So he'd like mark it and got to like 3 marks on the trees. It's like, I've been here 3 times already. And I mean, he's panicking at this point. I mean, it's funny, but he's, you know, because he's a professor of navigation. Yeah, obviously.
It's so embarrassing when you get back to the group.
And he eventually got back after about 2 hours, but they'd sent dogs out to look for him and everything. Just like...
I think if that's me, I'm definitely coming back and saying, no, I just did one big leap, actually. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, no, nice walk. Yeah,
loved it.
Yeah. So what they say is apparently if you are lost in an unfamiliar terrain, you stay still and wait for somebody to come and find you. Don't keep walking. But that goes against everything that your brain is telling you to do.
I'm not doing that. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're never getting lost, though, are you?
I'm just walking straight back.
Yeah,
straight back to the group. And what's the problem? So are some people born with a better sense of direction, like an innately better sense of direction?
Well, we don't know, but we do know that it is innate and it is, I mean, it develops really early. So like newborn rats, within a couple of weeks, they basically established all of their sort of sense of direction. They know which way, they've got a sense of place and a sense of orientation. Mm-hmm. And their ability to sort of, you know, understand direction is as good at, basically, as soon as you can measure it in newborns, it's as good as it's ever going to be. So they won't improve it over their lives.
Right.
I mean, I like to think that humans can do better because we adopt technology and we have teaching. And so, you know, maybe we do better. But there's an awful lot about this that's sort of, you know, really quite innate, quite sort of fixed in terms of how well your brain is working, how it's going to be connected, how the cells are going to be connected together, how strongly they fire in certain regions of the brain. And, you know, and obviously you can change things because we've seen it with the cabbies.
Yeah. And neuroplasticity says you can change this stuff. Nothing is sort of set in stone.
Yeah.
Necessarily.
So you can make improvements. And I really want
you
to make improvements.
That, yeah. Does Mary think there's any hope for you?
Well, I'll let you know what she said.
Interestingly, there have been very few studies that have tried to, you know, actually train people to navigate. So it's an interesting question of how do we learn? There must be some innate ability that we have, but I think maybe we just learn by copying, you know. So, and that's one reason why it maybe is hard to, you know, dissociate nature from nurture, because, you know, people maybe who have the genes that make them good navigators also have parents who are good navigators and maybe who have developed good strategies for navigating. So you know, if you're genetically predisposed to be good at navigation, then it's likely that you also had parents who are good navigators. But I mean, something I now have been encouraging people to do is just, you know, when you have time, explore your environment, turn off your GPS. Don't always see if you can do it without the GPS.
In summary, that was a no. wasn't it? There's no hope for you.
So I searched for ways in which people say you can improve.
I bet you did.
Improve your navigation. So I'm going to list them to you. So So the first one is like create a mental map. So review a map of your proposed route in your head, like before you head out. And if you've got a physical map, you can trace it with your finger, and that really helps your brain, apparently, to sort of, you know, put that all in the right place. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I pretty much did that in that evening in Soho. It didn't work.
And still fucked it.
Yeah. Second one is be mindful of the place you're in. So stop and look around, sort of, you know, enjoy the scenery. The suggestion is that you actually stop enough to take notes and like write something down again. So it's just like cementing, like, oh, there's a church here, and opposite the church is the, you know, that kind of thing.
Something that occurs to me that must have an impact on this is not necessarily just the fact that we all follow maps on our phones, but the fact that we're on our phones as we're walking around so much of the time.
So we're not even
looking
up.
So you're much less aware of your surroundings.
Yeah, the landmarks are just like completely, you're oblivious to them, basically.
Yeah.
So, but that sort of idea of almost talking to yourself or writing, you know, it sort of cements things in your brain about where you are and how things are connected. The other thing is put the phone away, put all the technology away and just do it by either paper maps or by memory. So there's research that shows that actually using GPS degrades our ability to do the kind of processing of a route. So once you get used to that, you don't bother then thinking about how long is that going to take me, and you know, what's going to be the best route, because you're just being presented with it. Mm-hmm. So then when you don't have that, not only can you not, when you don't have that technology, not only can you not get anywhere, but you don't have the sort of hardware wiring that's really able to do that, you know, for you, sort of from scratch.
Because you haven't been using it.
Yeah, basically. And there was an experiment in Japan that found that if you're using GPS to get to a destination compared to somebody who's using a paper map, the paper map people get there quicker.
Really?
Yeah, because they basically sort of...
When you're
GPS users made more mistakes, so they would follow the dot and like it would go in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
And they'd have to turn around and come back,
okay.
Whereas the paper map users, it was more sort of intuitive, I guess.
But actually, I guess you're more focused, aren't you?
Yeah.
Like, really, like, because it's taking a bit more brain power for you to be just doing it.
I think you're taking responsibility.
Yeah.
So you're like, I am doing this. I'm not letting something
you've
else...
You've totally outsourced it.
On the phone.
You're just like, tell me what I'm doing.
Yeah. Another tip is to basically take different routes to the same place, so you kind of get that sort of sense of spatial awareness of where everything relates to everything else.
I don't think you would, but it sounds in principle.
And the other thing they say is sort of think in terms of points of the compass. So orient yourself in space, like figure out where north is. And sort of then think about, you know, oh, which way am I facing now? And then your brain builds up, roughly there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I went to a talk a few years ago by a guy called Tristan Gooley, who's who has recovered from his... He's recovered from his childhood trauma in the playground now.
Yeah.
He's a natural navigator. And so he talks about how you can go out into the countryside and spot all these things that tell you about the terrain, which direction you're facing. And, you know, so if you're on this, if you're walking along a path... And this is the only thing I remember from this whole thing. And there's like puddles on one side of the path, but not on the other. Then those puddles are on the south side. Or is it the north side? I'm pretty sure the puddles are on the south side because the sun's coming in and the hedgerow sort of stops. Sun's coming in basically from the south.
Yeah.
And so the puddles don't dry out because the hedgerow is sheltering the puddles, whereas on the north side of the path, the sun hits them and they evaporate. Yeah.
Oh, that's
clever. And there's stuff about, you know, which way trees are sort of oriented in terms of being bent over and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, it was great. It was really interesting. And I bought one of his books.
And unhelpful.
I still can't do it.
Well, good on Ghoulies, though. Okay, I think we probably know the answer to this week's question, but I am interested to hear what Mary had to say. I assume you asked her.
Yeah. Is there such a thing as a bad sense of direction? Hello.
Let me think.
So I think there are definitely differences between people. Some people are better navigators than others, but I think a lot of people who think they have a bad sense of direction maybe don't. And I think maybe a lot of people just are guided by this idea of a bad sense of direction and don't even try to navigate, rely on their sat nav or whatever. And I would like to sort of say, well, you know, even if you think you have a bad sense of direction right now, you shouldn't assume that that's the way it has to be, and you could probably improve your navigation ability.
I don't think you're one of these people who just thinks you've got a bad sense of direction, but
no,
actually
I definitely
it's all right.
Have.
I think you're squarely, you've got a terrible sense of direction.
Yeah. And I'm not going to be ashamed about it.
You should be a little bit.
Do you think?
Yeah.
I mean, I've really tried to work on it and it hasn't really made much difference.
That's even more shameful.
No, it's not shameful. If you have a deficiency and you work on it, that's a good thing.
But you haven't improved.
Yeah, but that's
What's
not my
point?
Fault. You know, I'm putting the effort
Whose
in.
Fault? Whose fault is it?
It's nobody's fault. It's just how things are. My brain is good at different things.
I tell you what, I love episodes where we just talk about something you're no good at. They're my favourite.
Can you get me home?
Yeah, probably. Hop on my back. Eureka is a Stack production presented by Dr. Michael Brooks and Rick Edwards. The production team is Temi Adebayo, Katie Baxter, Luke Moore and Charlie Morgan. Sound design by Katie Baxter. Special thanks to today's expert, Professor Mary Hegarty. We also do really love hearing from you guys, so if you have a burning science question you want answering, drop us an email at eureka@stack.london, or you can find us, as always, on Twitter at EurekaPod. Thanks.
Eureka is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.